Marin along with Mark Riley. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, and Mark Riley. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing all right.
That's good, man. Today on the show, we've got a brand new interview with the separation of church and state crusader, Reverend Barry Lynn. Plus, we'll relive the moments when we fought a Republican in the studio, and we're going to let you in on what happened when the mics were turned off. How about that?
Oh, man.
That's a good one. Oh, man. All right. Anyways, right now, we did an interview with Eric Bogosian. He's a very animated, very talented guy. Had a good time. He's got a new DVD out. It's called Wake Up and Smell the Coffee. He's currently in the movie Blade Trinity, and he was talking to us when all this happened. So listen up. You're going to be playing the devil in the last days of Judas Iscariot?
Yes.
And that's a play?
At the Public, yeah. Stephen Geergis' new play.
Dude, I've seen you play some evil bastards before.
Yeah, typecasting.
I just saw Wonderland on DVD for the first time.
Oh, my friend. My brother.
And you look like that dude a little
bit. Yes, and he just got out of jail.
He did.
Last year after serving a lot of time.
What was his name, Nash?
Yeah, Eddie Nash. Eddie Nash.
Eddie, yeah, that was a demonic part. That was a very...
I had so much fun on that movie.
That was about the John Holmes murder. The Wonderland killings.
Oh, okay.
What a great group of people to work with, too.
Yeah.
Val and Josh Lucas and Kilmer Cosworth.
Lucas was brilliant there. Yeah. And Kilmer was really good, too.
Josh Lucas is... Well, we had a lot of fun. And, you know, it's funny, when you watch a movie, you see things that are happening for 2 minutes on screen, or maybe 30 seconds.
Right.
Josh pistol whipping me, or dragging me across, or me beating up that. And, you know, that was 4 hours of us just smashing and killing. I had scars on my wrists from the handcuffs. I had pistol whipping, scars on my face.
Wow.
Because low budget movie, you just do it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, there's no stuntmen or anything. You
I had to
jump off that thing.
They just keep making you do it. Just fight him. Keep going. Keep going. There's
looks
no stunt
good.
Guy. Yeah, absolutely. So, when you do an evil dude, like when you do Satan, you know, what are you thinking about? How are you going to handle it? I mean, what do you think
Hell
Satan
is
does?
What he's thinking about?
What's your concept of Satan? Is he charming?
This is going to be a fairly charming Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to be this is a sort of the gentleman Satan.
Please
allow me to introduce myself kind of Satan.
De Niro did Satan in Angel. Was it Angel Heart?
Yeah.
And he's pretty fairly charming Satan.
Yeah.
Was one long
this
fingernail?
This is like a... What?
What? Didn't he have one long fingernail?
He had a coke nail.
That's what I should get. I should start growing that now.
But a lot of people
they put Judas Iscariot on... I don't want to give away too much of the place. You know, Steven's working on it now, and we go into rehearsal in January. Mm-hmm. But basically, Judas Iscariot is pulled back from purgatory, and he's put on trial again to kind of relook at the case of what went on with him and Jesus.
Maybe you got a raw deal?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, and then they say, okay, we need certain, you know, witnesses.
Uh-huh.
And Satan is one of the witnesses.
So
they bring me, I'm a star witness.
Oh, really?
You know, continuing along with my Law and Order experiences that Mark and I were talking before.
Is he going to produce it like contemporary? Like, is it going to be like a contemporary feel to it?
Well, have you ever seen
on the media a little bit?
Have you ever seen any of the Labyrinth stuff? This is the Labyrinth Theater that's doing it at the Public. And they were originally like a Latino theater, and now it's kind of morphed into anything that's new. And so it's all over. It's very urban, New York City, new, old, all blended together. It's absolutely, I mean, the readings that we've been doing, Sam Rockwell's going to do it, and Phil Hoffman's directing, and it's just really funny. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He's directing it, and Sam Rockwell's in it?
Yeah, he directs a lot of the stuff that they do. You know, right now in the theater in New York, we've kind of lost a lot of the kamikaze kind of theater attitude that was around in, like, the 70s and
80s. Like, who were some of those people?
Well, a lot of the stuff that used to happen at the Public, a lot of the, you know, the Mammoth plays, the Shepherd plays, a lot of the downtown stuff.
Right.
Just do crazy stuff, and who cares whether
it
makes money.
Like the stuff you used to go pretty out of control, right?
Well, I had,
Yeah.
I mean, we did stuff, and the point was is to make your friends happy, and a lot of what's going on in the theater today is it's so expensive that your friends actually can't afford to come to see it, so they don't come, and you're basically playing to this sort of dinner theater crowd that's coming from Scarsdale. I just saw Neil LaBute's Fat Pig.
We had him in here. Very smart, nice guy.
and it was terrific. You know, the thing about theater, I mean, I love theater. I've been in the theater since I was in the 10th grade when I was doing Romeo and Juliet or something. And it, for me, it's a completely different thing than movies or anything else. I just love the theater. And the stuff that I really loved back in the 70s and 80s was stuff that you go to it, and then afterwards you have a big argument with each other about it for about 2 hours after you went and saw the show, because what was he saying? What did that mean? Or that? No, that was right. That was wrong. That's something that happens in the theater more than any place else. And this play, this is gonna get
well, his movies do that too. I mean, even, you know, in The Company of Men, I remember after that movie, you know, with, you know, men and women, the four people that four of us went, and he just got into this thing about, you know, what was that about? You know, what is he really saying? Is this loaded in the same way?
This is loaded in the same way. The only difference with this that I noticed is that in the movie, those guys are kind of bad guys and they do bad things to that deaf mute girl.
Right.
In this, the people that are the leads are not the bad people. They're actually good people, and then they've got bad people around them. But it's a fantastic examination of, I mean, you got to see it. I mean, ostensibly, it's about the fact that this guy's dating a girl that's really heavy, and his friends are kind of giving him a hard time.
Is it a real heavy girl?
Yeah, she's a heavy girl. But it's what's amazing about it is you sit there watching. You've got two women on Carrie. She was Felicity on
Carrie Russell.
Yeah. Okay, so she's on stage, and the fat girl is Ashley. I should call her fat girl, but the heavy fat girl.
What's the title of the play?
But you're looking at Ashley, and you're going, she's like, if I had my choice, I would go with her, because the whole bit is about how she emanates all this.
Right.
Sexy, fun, great, smart stuff that you'd want to be with her. And you'd never want to be with the character that Carrie Russell's playing. I mean, I like to talk about it because I think the more good stuff there is, the more it's sort of generally good and more people go to theater. And
I'd like to go to theater more.
I don't think people go now because it's expensive and it's boring most of the time.
Well, let's talk about the risk-taking that you were talking about in the 70s, because there's sort of like fragments of the performance art scene sort of left over downtown. There are people that come into this town now that do performance art, but now it doesn't really have the forum that it used to. And there used to be, it seems, when you started out, there was just a frenetic energy. There was wild risk-taking. You know, everybody wanted to be part of that scene down there. And it has money ruined this? Are people not willing to invest or take chances on that type of theater?
Well, sadly, two things have happened.
Uh-huh.
And they would seem to have nothing to do with any of this, but they have a lot to do with it. Rent.
Okay.
The expense of paying for your apartment changes the whole way it works. You can't be a bohemian if you've got to find $1,500 a month to pay for your share of the $3,000 a month apartment.
And if you're a bohemian who lives in Queens, your credibility is not what it should be.
But even then, you can't. I mean, it's too expensive everywhere.
Right.
I mean, I was paying $200 a month for a storefront in the Lower East Side, and so then I had lots of time to be like a crazy guy. Hang around my friends and drink and be stoned all the time.
Yeah.
But also go and see each other's things and all that. That's one thing. The other thing is they have figured out in New York that they can make Mongo bucks with the theater. Because there are some really rich people in the city now, a huge, very rich middle class, upper middle class, who, when they want to do something special, they, you know, movies are too low grade for them now.
Right.
So $50, $100 for a ticket.
Night at the theater, no problem.
Jump change, man.
I went to see Kushner's musical, and that cost us like, you know, $150, $200 for two tickets.
You got to make, for us, we got to make a, I don't know if I'm really in the category of the average guy. I mean, I do pretty well, but it's not, it's still, I got to think about it. It's like, do I really want to spend, but there are people who don't have to think about it. You know, it's like, we're going to spend $200 for dinner, we're going to spend $50 for parking, we're going to spend a couple $100 for the tickets.
And it's not a problem. It's not a big thing. You know, it's funny you said rent, because I was thinking gentrification at the same time you were saying rent, which is a byproduct. One's the byproduct of the other. The fact that you know, there are very few places where people can nurture anything anymore without having to spend a huge bundle of money for performance space. I mean,
well, it's, then you don't get that looseness, which is just a bunch of community about a community.
Yeah.
In our day, you know, we had the Worcester Group down the street and all those fun guys down, Liz LeCompte and Willem and Spalding, and all those guys were doing junk. And I was working around the kitchen, and there was the Mud Club, and there was all just stuff. And we weren't trying to get anybody into the neighborhood. This was for ourselves.
Right.
And we just, now that's happening in Brooklyn to some degree right now. I find myself out there more and more just going out to see what somebody might
there's some
be
good
doing.
Stuff out there? Because let me ask you a question.
A lot of places are kind of small. It's a pretty small place.
Well, I just read Bob Dylan's book, and you know, a lot of people forget that Bob Dylan, at the time he was in the Village, it was like vaudeville. There were shows that went on during the day. There were dozens of guys doing the same thing. And you forget that, like, at any given point in time, like, I like to say, like, yeah, things are just crappy now. There's not as much talent as there is, as there used to be, because you kind of mythologize your mm-hmm. generation or his generation. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of crap then, too, yes?
I think there's always a lot of crap. In hindsight, you look back and you go, you only remember the good guys.
But as a performance
artist, you remember Bob Dylan, of all people, you know. And,
right.
Well, then they were all geniuses like Bob Dylan. No.
Yeah, but
you would have gone and it would have been awful.
Right, but like in your day, because you know, you were in a seminal period of performance.
You're trying to make him sound old or something? In your day.
Well, in that time, you were around when, you know, obviously.
I'm 80s. I'm a Trivial Pursuit card from the 80s.
Really?
What Armenian performance artist in the 80s
but, I mean,
invented
you were
the solo performance and destroyed theater single-handedly?
Exactly. So yes. Like, who were some of the guys back then that you see around? They're like, oh, no, that's the guy that used to wear the hat. And do the thing. So there's got to be a few of those guys around.
I can't say who that is. There's some guys who died, and it was Brother Theodore who died.
Drown it.
He was.
We're going to come back with Eric Bogosian. We'll be back in a second. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. We're sitting with Eric Bogosian, whose new book, Wasted Beauty, comes out in May.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick call here from, it looks like we got Ted in Nebraska. Hi, Ted, how are you?
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Hey.
Once again, you liberals are on there celebrating your degenerate art,
completely
out of touch with mainstream values, and you just sit there and spout on and on, and I guess you don't care.
Oh, no, I hate when help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
South Pennsylvania.
Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 20 after the hour here on Radio Halliburton. Halliburton, the pipeline to freedom. Hey, W's been up in Canada. Here comes, right up the Northwest Passage. Clean that up, Mountie. What's the matter, Canada? Too chicken to go to Iraq and fight with the real men? Oh, no, I am a Canadian. I can't surrender. Can I surrender to you? I love John Kerry. I love Celine Dion. I guess we should thank Canada for one thing, taking all the draft dodgers off our hands. Hey, wait, I think I see one now. Run, traitor, run. Woohoo! Ooh, direct hit. Gut him and throw him in the truck. Where's your affordable health care now, hippie? Wow, too many Molsons. Hey, speaking of hippies, the Supreme Court's going to rule on medical marijuana. What's the matter, liberals? Stone. Oh, I have cancer and the chemo makes my tummy hurt. I need the Supreme Court to give me a bong hit. Keep smoking the weed, liberal. It makes you an easy target. Whoa, killing pinkos just marked the shark the munchies. Hey, it's 22 after the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Tommy Pinko, liberals, New York.
Yeah, that's a KIA caller. We should turn Canada into one big prison and throw our trash over the border. Put litter in its place. That's what I say. It's 24 after the hour, time for the Neocon Power Weather Forecast. Up in Canada, it's raining cowards. South of the border, the winds of freedom blow through every patriot. Oh, Dan Rather, how'd you get in here? Go on, get out of here, traitor. All right. Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Wow, man, what just happened, man? What happened?
Are you all right,
black
man?
Out?
Are you okay?
I have one of those things?
I think you did, yeah.
Well, the contract just arrived from Fox. They want you.
So I have those weird fits. So, Eric Bogosian, still in the studio. I wanted to talk to you. We got some calls for you, but I want to talk to you about audiences. Because I remember seeing, I guess it was at the beginning of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, which I saw three times in different forms, as I was telling you. I saw it once up in Boston when you were workshopping it, and then I saw it here in New York. And you took out my favorite character, which you didn't even remember because I asked you on the break. You did a character of a guy just, basically the way I remember it, he was sitting on the couch doing bong hits saying, I'm an outlaw, man.
It gets changed around, and as I'm working on a show, sometimes it just doesn't gel, and then I move him to a different show.
Right.
And so that guy was too close to another guy that was in that show.
Oh, okay.
There was a guy in that show who was talking about how, like, the microwave ovens, man.
Yeah.
They're going to, like, you know, the TV set's going to be watching you, man. If you do something that the TV set doesn't like, man, then it's going to send a signal to the microwave oven, door pops open, your ashes.
and
it was all about microwave ovens and about we were being watched by Big Brother and everything. And that bit ended up being Sex, Drugs. But I held on to the outlaw. And
yeah.
His name is Red.
Yeah.
And it's like, here, man, you like to party, dude? I like to party, too. And Red ended up in Pounding Nails.
Oh, he did?
And he was another kind of side of me, rather than the paranoid side. He was sort of the side that does everything, screws everything, takes every drug, and does everything, the kind of character that I'm sort of... In fact, it was based on a guy who came up to me in a parking lot who saw me with a Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
And when I finished the bit, I had a Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll show jacket on, and the guy goes, hey, man, you like Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll?
Yeah.
My name's Red, Motor Captain, Hell's Angel. You know, give me one of those jackets. And I was, like, quaking with fear, and I thought, this is a bit.
Yeah.
You know, here I am, some kind of badass, but this is the real badass.
Yeah.
And I grew up with guys like that, so I'm not...
They're always the guys that come up to you, too, after a show. What's up, dude?
Yeah, man, here. Take some of these.
He's a real good.
He's a wake you up. I used to do that back in the 80s, and I wouldn't know where I was for a couple of days, and then I would like, that's a long, long time ago. Yeah. As you were pointing out earlier, I'm ancient.
No, you're not ancient. Yeah, that wasn't saying that.
Howard Hughes.
You're not much older than me. So that was kind of cool, right, Riley?
Yeah.
And Eric Bogosian?
Yeah.
Pretty funny. I liked when he did the impressions at the end. Next time he's here, I want him to do, not impressions, but his own, the characters. Anyways, coming up, we got Paul Thompson from the Terror Timeline. Always interesting. It's 28 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Welcome back. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's morning sedition on Air America Radio, 34 past the hour. We're gonna hear again our interview with Paul Thompson, the author of The Terror Timeline and a frequent guest on our show. I love this guy because, you know, this work is such a result of obsessive inquiry. Like, you know, the guy, you could just tell before it was published on the website, it was, I think it's, I can't remember, cooperativeresearch.com. .org, yeah. It's that, you know, this was a guy that just got possessed with knowing everything he could about what led up to 9/11, and he used all press resources.
He was painstaking in documenting all this stuff. Going back, by the way, 25 years, back to 1979 is where he starts.
And it's weird because it can, you know, if you have a conspiracy theory, I've gotten some flack lately from people who think that I am being critical of them by calling them conspiracy theorists. I'm the first guy that would be a sucker for any sort of conspiracy theory. I just, as of late, and because of our show, and because of the research that we do, you know, I can't let my brain run off that way as much as I used to, because a lot of times I think it's an easy way out. And I think that conspiracy thinking can really become, it can make it so you're no longer able to see the truth, even when it comes down the pike, because you're committed to this unprovable thing.
Well, you know, it's funny about conspiracies, because there are some people who would argue that the late 60s, by themselves, were a conspiracy.
Right.
I remember when there was a thing called COINTELPRO, it was a government program whose job it was to infiltrate organizations like the Black Panthers. And when people first started talking about it, nobody believed it. Oh,
yeah.
No, it couldn't exist. The government wouldn't do that sort of thing. Blah, 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 blah. And then they found the papers. And it really was a COINTELPRO. And they really did infiltrate the Black Panthers.
Now all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? It's all true. All of it. Everything that I, you know what I mean? It doesn't take much for me. I think one of the reasons I get down on what I think are conspiracies is because I just don't have the energy. I spent my life submerged in speculation. I think a lot of times conspiracy thinking is about, you know, it kind of feels like, it kind of feels like you're thinking. You know, without doing the research. You know what I mean? It's a lot easier if somebody will connect all these random dots and make you go, oh, my God, of course that's true, you know, without doing any research whatsoever.
Well, the Tuskegee experiment, another example of something that went on for 30-some-odd years that no one would admit was going on. It was whispered about. And the people who whispered about it, the people who said, you know, they did that, they injected these people with syphilis and didn't treat it. People said, no, that's it. You're a conspiracy. Conspiracy theorists, you're crazy. The government
mm-hmm.
wouldn't do it. Turned out it was true.
Well, I happen to be actually on the pulse of one of the greatest conspiracies ever taken upon, you know, or put upon the people of the world. It's a mind control experiment that has been going on for probably about 50 years, and everyone is victim of the results of this. Do you know what it is?
No.
Television.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. I mean, this thing is the most dangerous conspiracy. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people sit completely comatose, letting this thing radiate their brains and guide their thoughts. Did you know that at any given point in time, like, let's say a TV show has a 12 share. That means for that TV show, like, let's say it's an NBC show. Let's say it's CBS. Let's say it's Everyone Loves Raymond. It's got a 12 share on whatever night it's on. That means that 12 million people have turned their brains over to CBS. Now, that is some powerful stuff, man.
Well, it is powerful stuff, and it's funny, but you're not including radio in any of this.
Radio, no, radio is truth.
Let me tell you something about radio. Radio is one of the great conspiracy centers in America. I used to get phone calls all the time, particularly from a couple of different people, who said that somebody was blasting radio waves through their wall and into their brain, into this thing that they had, implanted in their brain, and was driving them nuts.
That's because we are. Put your ear closer to the speaker. You know
closer.
Who you are. It's
closer.
Time for you to do our bidding. We will tell you exactly what we want you to do when we figure out what that is. Yeah, it's hard to have that kind of power for somebody and not have a message. I always had this fantasy that I'd become a cult leader, but that ends with the fact that I have no vision for it. You know, I would hate to gather like hundreds of thousands of followers and just go, okay. So what do you guys want to do? You want to go to the movies or something? Watch a little television?
So we...
I don't know, you know. Radio is obviously very powerful, and I kind of forgot what I was going to say here, but I know that I'm going to say this. We got Paul Thompson coming up. This is a part of an interview, and we covered a lot of stuff that was kind of surprising. We've had him on a number of times, and we always find out something new about this administration's ineptitude in the war on terror. Paul has chronicled it all in the great book, The Terror Timeline, and he never fails to surprise us, so enjoy. Paul Thompson, the author of The Terror Timeline, is sitting here. Who was your favorite painter?
I don't know. I like the surrealists.
So does Kent Jones. Kent the Colonel Jones just said he likes the surrealists. It's interesting. I wonder what you two have in common, because I was never a surrealist guy. I was an abstract expressionist guy. Mark Rothko was my favorite for years, just like the big floating colors. I just love him. I love him. Riley, you're I guess, the guy who painted the four dogs playing poker?
No. Stay High 149 is my favorite artist.
Graffiti artist?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just read an article about them. But let's get to this. I could talk art for a long time, but we have terror to talk about, which is not an art form, but a mode of warfare. I love books like this because it's got everything in it. You start with the creation of bin Laden during the Mujahideen and the Islamic Arabs, as Peter Bergen calls them, and then you move all the way through 9/11 and past it. Have you added any new stuff recently?
Yeah, well, when the book is going to come out next year or the year after, hopefully we'll have a new edition with new information, and the website, we're putting up new information. And I just found out some really interesting stuff. There's a lot of people helping me out, and somebody sent me something yesterday. Not a lot of people know about this, but there are a number of war games that were going on at the time of 9/11.
Right.
The U.S. military was conducting exercises, and we know of at least three exercises. One of them was
any of them bombing the World Trade Center?
Well, get this. Right. One of them was actually this thing called the Reconnaissance Office, which is kind of a CIA thing, kind of a military thing, a joint department. And they had an exercise where they had a building in Washington, and they were envisioning at 9 o'clock on the morning of 9/11 a plane crashing into their building.
Come on.
This is 4 miles from where the plane really crashes, at the same time. So that one's certainly curious.
Well, okay, wait. So wait, this was it an active war game? Were they going to fly something into a building?
Kind of like a fire drill, except instead of saying we're evacuating the building because of a fire, we're evacuating the building, and what would our response be if a plane hit our building?
Because, some people think that whatever hit the Pentagon was not a plane. I mean, I don't know where that conspiracy theory goes from there, because they look at the hole and they say there's no way a plane could have made this hole. Well, obviously it could have, but I don't know what the countering
This isn't the Pentagon. This is another building.
That
people are saying, Condoleezza Rice is saying, we could have never imagined planes hitting buildings, planes being used as weapons. And here, on the very day, there's an exercise about the very thing, and there are a lot of them. But that was just one of the things that was going on at the time. There was another one called Northern Vigilance, where a lot of fighters are being sent off towards the North Pole, kind of like the name Northern Vigilance. In case the Russians were just back in the Cold War mentality, they're coming over the North Pole. So they're having an exercise like that. And they're having another one called Northern Guardian, which is the same kind of thing. And what I just found out yesterday, this person sent me, is that according to some pretty obscure military journals, it talks about how a whole bunch of fighter aircraft from Langley Air Force Base, that's one of the two bases that are responding on 9/11, they're all being sent off to Iceland. There's two-thirds of their aircraft are being sent off to Iceland and take part in a war game.
Well, what are they saying? Is that they were on the planes with remote controls operating some smaller device to go into...
There's a lot of theories, and some of it just doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, but with all these theories, if there are that many people involved, then those people that were on the planes, weren't really killed in those planes, that their loved ones are playing along with them during I don't understand. I'm a conspiracy theory guy.
I would say incredible ideas have to have incredible evidence to back them up. And, there's some curious things, but...
Yeah, I like to look at conspiracy theories as mutated hope. that in lieu of an explanation that fits someone's, idea of what an explanation should be, they have to, out of their fear, construct some sort of temporary religion that keeps them from going crazy. Deborah in New York, how are you?
Hi, Deborah.
Good morning.
What's up?
I was an eyewitness. I happened to have been at a seminar for work at the Arlington Sheraton Hotel, which is a couple blocks away from the Pentagon, with an unobstructed view. There were just warehouses between the hotel and the Pentagon. And when I came out from a break, I heard that the World Trade Center was on fire, and I knew that my colleague was upstairs in her room. So I went upstairs. She was on the top floor.
Yeah.
And we were watching the World Trade Center burning I said to her, if it could happen there, it could happen here. We ran to the window and literally looked up and saw the plane go over our head and watched it go into the Pentagon.
Wow. And it was not a small plane.
It was not a small plane. It was a passenger plane.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but thanks for calling.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. So there's so much for that particular.
Wow, that must have just been awful.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that people forget. I even think that people forget in terms of even in some of the middle of the country that, people who are around the areas, here, I mean, there's no doubt in New York what happened to anyone who lived here. We know what happened, and somebody like Deborah calls up, she knows exactly what happened, but once people start being fed information, the further away you get from the center of the crime, of the tragedy, and you don't really know, and you start to, your perception is based on newspaper and TV images anyways, why not just sit there and speculate?
But one of the curious things that keeps that idea alive is that there were a lot of videos that were filmed at the time of the plane hitting the Pentagon. I mean, the Pentagon, there are a zillion cameras, security cameras pointed all around it. We know there was a gas station across the street that had a camera pointed right at where the crash was. There was a hotel had a camera pointed right there. The security people came and grabbed all that footage within an hour. and that's never been released. So it's, if you want to get to the bottom of these things, you really have to release all these things. Why aren't they putting that information out there? I want to see all this stuff released, and then we can put to rest some of these questions.
I think that, you know, strategically, you know, it's my belief that, you know, a lot of times stuff is put under government clampdown just so conspiracy theories will fester, and that way, you know, the truth is never known. I think that's what happened with JFK. I mean, that no matter what truth comes, whatever comes out now, even if it is the God-honest truth, people go, yeah, right. you know what I mean? There's no way to ever prove that with any, you know, with any real clarity, ever.
We'll have more with Paul Thompson after the break, and you're going to want to stick around. One of the best calls we've ever gotten on Morning Sedition is coming up next. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, waging a war of words against stupidity. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
They want to add a little of their own information that they think he might have missed. So we've got a call coming up from a woman on the Lower East Side that'll blow your mind. Terry on the Lower East Side, what's going on?
Hey, Terry.
Hi. I've been living in my apartment on the Lower East Side for 21 years and took the apartment because of the view of the World Trade Center and the sky gazer, just one of those nut jobs. But yes, to tell the truth, I saw three phenomena within the 6 weeks before that have stuck with me and will go to my grave with me.
Okay.
One was a full moon brighter than anything that had ever been down there, mm-hmm, that sat on top of the antenna and then swung around in a spiral so that even though the Earth was going in one direction, it actually retrograded.
Whoa, Terry, back up a second.
It retrograded.
The moon moved around?
It moved around the tower.
Okay.
Number one world.
Okay. Trade. And what else did you see?
I saw about 3 weeks before that, three lights, one purple, one pink, one blue, beautiful lights, mm-hmm, most beautiful colors,
yeah,
hovering, uh-huh, around
just,
it.
Just hovering around the World Trade Center.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then during the day one day.
Yeah.
I saw a small airplane flying so close to it,
yeah,
that I can't believe that it wasn't reported to the FAA.
It might have been. I don't know. Well, you know what?
But people who were in that building must have seen something.
You mean the small plane?
The small planes, those three lights, lights, you know, like Arco, during that period of time, he's talking about, oh, guess what? You know, whenever there's going to be some kind of problem,
yeah,
there's lights from the aliens are hovering around, this spacecraft mentioned.
So, yeah, and I would think certainly if the moon sort of jiggled around and swung around.
Yeah,
people,
that told me right away. And my upstairs neighbor, yeah, with exactly the same view saw the same thing.
She saw the moon
and
move around.
And she's a fundamentalist Christian woman. So it's not as though I'm some crazy New York Jew, you know.
That's right. No, fundamentalist Christians are definitely not crazy.
You see the same thing as I see.
Right. Well, thank
okay.
you. Thank you very much,
okay,
Carrie.
Thank you.
We're going to talk to Paul about now. Paul, any have you got any reports that the moon moved a few weeks before?
Sorry, don't have that in my book.
How about the purple lights and the nothing?
No.
What, how about the small plane? Anything?
Don't have that either. No.
Wow.
Terry, I wish we could, I'm not, you know, certainly thank you for calling, but we don't have any of that in the timeline. But you want to take one more call?
Sure.
I don't know how we're going to beat that, really.
Yeah.
But I appreciate her calling. I'm not going to, you know. I mean,
I know. You're not going to say she's nuts.
I've moved chairs with my mind.
Okay,
you know,
Kreskin.
But I was high at the time, and I wish I could make it happen. Kathy, listening to WLIB New Jersey. Good morning.
Hi, Kathy.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Paul.
Hey.
All right, two quick questions. Paul, have you gone to the website 911truth.org? That's one question. And is it possible, because I've heard this, that you can remotely control a plane all over this country if you so chose?
Okay.
Nice.
The 911truth.org, I think that is the website with the Pentagon theory that,
yeah,
it was not. You've been there.
Yeah, they focus on that kind of stuff.
Right.
And the second question is that, yes, the technology to remote control planes has been around a long time. Not a lot of people know about it, but you know, just a month before 9/11, there was a test to, I think it was a 727, to take it off and land it completely without any pilots, anybody on board. And the military has been doing that kind of things for quite a long time. So in theory, you know, there's one thing to say, in theory, yes, this is possible. But whether or not it happened on 9/11 is a whole other story.
If you go to Snopes.com, there is a debunking of this, of the other theory about the non-airliner projectile entering the Pentagon. I mean, you know, if you're going to look at the truth of, what is the other one called? Truth what? Truth 9, what is
9/11 truth.org.
If you're going to go there, you might as well go to Snopes too and just, you know, entertain the other option. Because I know that, you know, a lot of people have a lot of ideas about what happened. And again, the more complicated it gets, the more theories there are, the possibility of the truth ever being believed or noticed is going to lessen as time goes on.
Well, you know, I'm trying to fight that, Mark, to get through all this confusing propaganda and spin and just trying to figure out, you know, what are the facts. And it's hard because, as you point out, there's just so much muddling of the waters that goes on.
Well, I mean, as you see, you know, you get things, you know, very varied. You get remote control planes, you get the moving moon. And, you know, once you enter the world of unsubstantiated evidence, you know, in terms of the press or anything else, is that it just opens the door to any number of things to be valid to some people. What's the barometer of truth? I mean, if people don't trust the press, which most people don't, and on some level the media and the press shouldn't be trusted, rightfully so. But there are, as you said, or as you've done in your book, if you go through enough reports and you do trust certain reporters as being credible, then you can put together a reasonable history of something. And but, you know, a lot of people be like, yeah, so what? That's not half as interesting as the moon moving around the tower.
See? But now, Paul, what about have you heard the theory that it wasn't the fuel that caused the two towers to collapse? You've heard that before.
Yeah, well, it probably wasn't the fuel because the fuel expended in a matter of a few minutes, sort of a big fireball.
Yeah.
And if it came down because of fire, it had to have been from office furniture and other things within the building burning, because the whole fuel from the plane just comes and goes. It burned off very quickly.
Right.
So, you know, it's some of this stuff. You see, the problem is that there's so much stuff that's out there that just hasn't really been solidly explained, because there's been so much secrecy. Everything is national security this, national security that. We can't tell you about this, we can't tell you about that. And so a lot of these things remain, debated on the internet, because people really don't know what the hard facts are. Everything's being held behind closed doors.
Well, hopefully that stuff will come out. Paul Thompson, thank you very much. The book is The Terror Timeline, and you can get that at morningsedition.com for a slight discount. It's always great to talk to you. That was Paul Thompson in an interview we did a while back. Coming up now, we've got Barry Lynn, the Reverend Barry Lynn from the
Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Exactly. And also, we're going to bring you behind the scenes a little bit of our wrestling match with a Republican. And up next, a compilation of some of Morning Sedition's best comedy.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, please hold.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron. We know that a lot of the calls to Morning Sedition don't make it off hold, but if you really want to vent or confess, leave us a message at 646-274-3678. It's the Morning Sedition mailbox, 646-274-3678. Tell us your name, where you're calling from, and how you listen to us, and we'll put the best ones on the air. 646-274-3678. Mark Maron, along with Mark Riley. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, people on vacation. How are you? Because we're there, too. Right, Riley?
Absolutely.
But we're here with you now. Isn't that weird? It's the miracle of recording. So what do we got? We're going to have a compilation of some of our best comedy. We're going to have some Planet Bushes. We're going to have some Rapture Watch.
Yeah.
And let's start off with this. Here we go. Every Wednesday, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 4-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here now, with today's dispatch from the War on Brains, is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Thank you, Zanker and Evans.
Oh.
Dateline, Washington, D.C., our country's capital, moved from New York City in 1790 because we just had to be closer to those toothless swamp monkeys in the South. November 24th.
Hey, Mort, I don't want to interrupt you, but who's the guy sitting next to you there?
It's not important, Mark. It's my brother, Mitch Milfington. He's here in town for Thanksgiving.
Greetings, Mark. I like stuffing.
Cease, monkey.
Well, it's nice meeting you, Mitch. Thanks for coming. Go ahead, Mort. I'm sorry.
This week, the civilized world saw how the Bush administration, a galumping, power-drunk, one-eyed cannibal giant, driven on by a pathetic 3% mandate, maliciously hurled yet another boulder against the cause of truth and human discovery. How? By cutting over $100 million from the National Science Foundation's budget. Yes, promoting the progress of science, advancing national health, prosperity, and welfare, and securing the national defense are all the ingredients of the George W. Bush agenda. In some weird parallel universe, maybe, but not here in the dark zone. Tis Xanadu. Which brings me to my next point. Even with a budget the size of the Pentagon's, the National Science Foundation would never be able to find out what the hell is wrong with my family. Watch out, you fool!
Who put that glass of milk in here?
You see, this happens every Thanksgiving, like clockwork. Is it any wonder I reject your breast?
I am not an animal. I am your brother, Mortimer.
You're the shame of the family.
I am not. I am a highly qualified dental hygienist.
Oh, no.
Why didn't you marry Gloria Gartz when you had the chance?
I did not. Love her. It would have been a shameful union. Oh. Ignominious.
But she was heir to the Crane plumbing fortune.
But I'm gay.
Stop saying that.
No.
People will think
what I tell them to think.
Guys, please. What difference does any of this make, all right? Well, what about the issues here? The issues.
Well, I guess you're right, wacky morning zoo guy.
Oh, boy.
What really matters is that during this trying period in our country's history, we take the time on Thanksgiving to cherish the family we have.
Whatever.
Hey, Mitch, here's a verbal gift for you. Shut up, you dumb monkey.
Right, I'm not right. A dumb monkey.
All right.
I'm a man.
And so, until
whatever
next time,
ass,
mother
fighter,
hated you. Read.
Hated you.
Right.
Whatever.
Resist. And that's
you hated you with your whatever.
Hey, the zoo monkey talking.
Zoo monkey.
All right, fellas. Yeah, thanks for coming by and bring your brother back.
Next Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that'll be a nice time to see.
Yeah, and have a happy New Year's and Christmas, Hebrew.
Oh,
can't even speak, can you?
Wow.
Shut up.
Yeah. You shut up.
Whatever.
So now I'm going to give you my dream from last night.
Uh-oh.
Here we go. I'm the newest member of U2. I play the kazoo. So clearly, they're going in a new direction musically. So I'm sitting around with Bono and the Edge and Larry and the skinny bass player with the granny glasses, and we're talking about songs for the new album. And Bono says, I've got some songs about AIDS in Africa and third world debt and reduction and Jesus. Edge says, I've sketched about 4 tunes about renewing our hope and discovering the decency inside each of us. Larry says, I've laid down some demo tracks about how perseverance and courage can overcome despair. And the skinny bass player says, I'm kicking around some material about the Montgomery bus boycott and the miracle of childbirth. They all nod, and then Bono says, so Mark, what have you got? I clear my throat and adjust my wraparound Bono sunglasses and say, I've written a song called Smack the Ass with 2 Z's. They stroke their unshaven chins for a second and nod. Bono says, so, is it a metaphor for American imperialism or the war in Iraq? I say, no, Bono, it's about smacking a girl on the ass because she's got a hot ass. And the Edge says, but Mark, after you smack her ass, do you feel the emptiness of the material world and embrace the spiritual essence? I say, no, Edge, after I smack her ass, we get all nasty and freaky. And then Larry says, so the song's really slow and mournful, right? It's an ironic commentary on the difficulty people have connecting on anything more than a superficial level. I say, no, Larry, I thought we'd all do a full blast with lots of sirens and moaning effects and a solo for me on the kazoo, maybe. And then the skinny bass player says, so it's a mindless party song for teenagers to get drunk and have unprotected sex to. I say, yeah, basically that's it. They look at each other for a minute, and Bono says, boys, I think we've got our first single. I woke up and my bed was filled with an unforgettable fire.
How did I know it was going to end that way?
I think I was going in and out of a weird sort of Beatles accent and an Irish accent.
I don't know. It sounded like Sinead O'Connor.
Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. And once again, joining us now on the phone from Planet Bush is correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God got your underpants, and he's giving you a wedgie.
Okay, good. So, look, today we're going to talk about the state of marriage in 2004.
Yes, let's do that. Mark, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Homosexuals are ruining our society.
Whoa.
Unnatural.
Hey, look.
Unclean.
Look, actually, I was specifically referring to divorce. I think it's interesting that conservatives are making such a big deal about protecting marriage now, but in the past, they've never done anything to improve the conditions that really help marriage, namely educating people and reducing poverty.
Sure. I guess you think education and money will just solve everything.
Yes, I do, actually.
You see, here's the thing. Conservatives really didn't have much power back in the late 70s when homosexuality was invented.
When Ronald Reagan
took office, the right-thinking straight white people in this country realized that marriage was under siege from these people in their neatly trimmed mustaches and tight-fitting polyester slacks, which is clearly forbidden in the Bible.
Adam and Eve. I've heard that. That's hacky. All right. Now, are you really saying that there weren't gay people until the late 70s?
Well, yes, Mark. It was caused by the jungle carnality of disco.
Wait, I don't understand.
Mark, I'm not an if-only kind of guy, but if we'd encourage ballroom dancing when we had the chance instead of the hustle and the bus stop, the moral landscape of this country would be very different today, promise you. Unfortunately, Gerald Ford, while an admirable man in many ways, what's the word I'm looking for? Gerald Ford?
Moderates?
Exactly. He was a queer, an angry top.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. Let me make sure I understand. Claim that high divorce rates in the red states have nothing to do with pushing young, uneducated... Stop it. Poor kids into marriage they're not ready for, but instead are caused by homosexuality, and that's all that, and that it all could have been prevented if there had been no disco? Is that what you're saying, Smalls?
What are you saying?
What's coming up? That's it. Cry, you little baby.
I have a whole closet full of leisure suits and shiny shirts.
There you go.
I used to go to Plato's Retreat.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. I'm glad we got you. This is what's at the core of it. We love you, and it's okay, buddy. Let it out, man. You just want to let it out. Yeah. That's it. There you go. Feel better?
We're saving marriage, Mark. Join us. A man, a woman, and Jesus. That's a marriage, my friend.
Thank you, Lawton. Thank you. All right, buddy.
You have a good Thanksgiving
you
now.
You too, buddy. It's
God
okay.
loves you.
I know
Deal
you
with
too.
It. Okay. Deal with it.
I'm trying.
Goodbye now.
Bye. Deal with it. We'll be back with more funny, including Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington. So stick around, you guys. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, fighting treason with reason on Air America Radio.
We're back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Let's get right back into it with one of our favorite segments on Morning Sedition, and evidently one of the president's favorites, too. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Drain, Oregon. Your grace.
Thank you, misguided Hebrew. Hear my voice, ye earth-loving God deniers. Gather round, ye peace-loving sucklers at the teats of Gog. Heed my words, thou lickers of toads, ye conversers with goats, and that guy at the pet store who told you you could hypnotize a parrot by kissing its stomach. I want my lips back. For now, it's time to set your clocks to daylight. You better save yourself time, because the rapture is upon us. Last hip demand, you might recall I told you about volcanoes and earthquakes disrupting voters, primarily in Democratic states. The week before that, I told you about demons in Sweden broadcasting their satanic poetry into outer space. And before that, I told you about a man who walked into a bar holding three ducks. He set them on the bar and ordered three drinks. Well, the long and short of that is two of the ducks were having Congress with the third duck, whose name, it turns out, was Puddles.
What?
You know, I got lots of letters from people saying they heard that same story, only with geese. Shows to go, yeah. But now something even more diabolical is happening. According to the Associated Press, some godless harlot in Hollywood is using eBay to sell a 10-year-old grilled cheese sandwich she claims bears the image of the Virgin Mary. Virgin Mary, my anointed ass! You better not take another bite out of that sandwich, dragon lady, unless you got a week's supply of Antichrist stamp tattoos. For it was prophesized in Revelation,
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Quote, and it shall happen that the mother of Satan will appear on plain white bread and American cheese cooked with no oil or butter and be kept in a clear plastic box with cotton balls on some nutcase's nightstand. And then a lake will burn and streets will run with blood. You know, the usual stuff. End quote. Now, under the circumstances, I can understand how a person would assume that any face appearing in a lump of 10-year-old congealed milk fat and bleached flour would have to be the mother of God. After all, for years, I labored under the false impression that the second face on the back of my brother's head was the incarnation of Jesus, until a friend of mine informed me it was, in fact, Beetle Bailey. No wonder my prayers were always answered with, "Ah, Sarge, KP again? May you burn in hell, Mort Walker, and High and Low sucks." So if you lunkheads want a piece of Mother Satan's cheese, you might want to hit eBay. But be forewarned, idolators, the reserve is a few $1,000, and you may have to wade through a few hundred Cain-enabled hairballs first. In the meantime, keep on fornicating, fornicators, and we'll keep the light on for you in hell.
Wow. Mort?
Yeah?
Milf? Mort?
Your grace.
I'm sorry, your grace. But Beetle Bailey, man, where'd you pull that out of?
Beetle Bailey is the incarnation of hell. The devil.
All right. Yeah, so what happens now? Where are you going now?
Well, I live alone. Why do you want to? You know, one thing, I've been following your career for years now,
yeah.
Mr. Marin.
Yeah.
There's one thing I can say with all due consistency, and that is best hairpiece in the business.
Whatever.
Slash and burn.
Whatever. Yeah, all right. Man, here we go. This was from Bob Jones III. Dr. Bob Jones wrote a letter to the president, a thank you letter, I guess, basically, a congratulatory letter.
Yes.
Now I'm just going to read again the first couple paragraphs quickly because we have another letter. Dear Mr. President, the media tells us that you have received the largest number of popular votes of any president in American history. Congratulations. In your reelection, God has graciously granted America, though she doesn't deserve it, a reprieve from the agenda of paganism. Paganism. You've been given a mandate. We the people expect your voice to be like the clear and certain sound of a trumpet, heralding the rapture. He doesn't write that. I added that. He says you owe the liberals nothing. But now we've just gotten hold of another letter. This is a congratulatory letter to President George W. Bush from High Priest Lothar the Vile, president of Anton LaVey University. Dear Mr. President, congratulations on being reelected. The Dark Lord has graciously moved forward the hidden agenda of paganism. The fact that this was accomplished with the unwitting cooperation of the Christians is almost as delicious as the blood of their babies. Put your agenda on the front burner and let it boil, along with the bat wings, toad foot, and tongue of dog. This will give you a potent broth which will enhance your virility, draw women to you, and lower the prime lending rate by a quarter point. Your policy in Iraq will soon unleash the elder gods from their slumber beneath the ziggurat of Dagon. The beast will arise with his unholy consort, the great whore of Babylon, drunk on the blood of saints. But hey, that's a given.
The beautiful thing is how well this dovetails with your environmental policy. Three more degrees of global warming and our dark master can emerge from the gates of Cthulhu and take his rightful place on a throne of skulls as foretold in the blood-drenched pages of the Necronomicon. Oh, and we're all looking forward to more tax cuts. Yours in Satan, Lothar.
Well, good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark.
Oh, there's the opening bell, and that means it's time for the Morning Sedition Friday Business Report. Good morning, capitalists. I have a news of important new trend. In 4 years, China will host the Olympic Games, attracting more foreign visitors to the Beijing area than at any other time in history. Yeah, you're reading my mind. That's where the World Toilet Organization comes in. For the last 3 days, frenzied fecal experts from around the world have been gathering in Beijing to share their knowledge on the best ways to swirl human excrement in a porcelain bowl and expel it into your drinking water. In fact, there was such a rush to the conference, some participants barely had enough time to drop the kids off at the pool. Drop the kids off at the pool. The pool. Hello. Showcased lavatories at the conference include one shaped like a ladybug, another one shaped like a grass hut, another one modeled after a nostalgic gas station bathroom with the sign, Whites Only. This is your opportunity, investors. You see, even though Beijing has over 2,800 public facilities, most of them are little more than open trenches filled with Mao Zedong. Mao Zedong. Hello, pay attention, people. This renewed interest in public washrooms can only lead to great groundswell in the price of toilet stock. So get off the pot and get your hands wet, America. Rebuilding China's aging toilet infrastructure has never looked more financially attractive. My eyes are tearing up just thinking about it. And this has been the Morning Sedition Friday Business Report.
Mao Zedong. There are people
out there. This is not the page we need to be on. When we come back, we're going to have a brand new Barry Lynn interview and, of course, the classic Wrestle Republican.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're talking to the Reverend Barry Lynn. He's the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We're talking about holidays. We're talking about, you know, what it means when people either complain. Like, I got numbers here, Barry. I got numbers that say 79% of Americans believe that, as the Bible says, Jesus Christ was born of the Virgin Mary without a human father, according to a new Newsweek poll. All right. I got a couple of questions. First of all, let's talk about, instead of holidays right away, the Bible literacy thing. You said something in a conversation we had in the past that, you know, when you start to argue with these religious fanatics about the literal interpretation of the Bible, this is really the most important argument to them that they can ever have.
No, it is, because they have to believe that every word of the Bible is absolutely accurate, literally accurate. That's why they don't want to talk about evolution. They don't want to talk about anything that is not within the confines of a biblical literalism. And it does make it pretty difficult to have a conversation if, for example, you believe literally that the book of First Kings is correct when it says that pi, you know, the mathematical symbol pi, is 3, not 3.1416, but 3, which is what the Bible says it is. Now, there would be a lot of cars that wouldn't be running on circular tires if that were correct. But if you argue with people about it, they will find some excuse for why it doesn't really mean what it says, because they're desperately interested in making sure that everything is viewed literally. Now, I don't care if people believe in the virgin birth, or they can care, as long as they're not making my tires, that pi is 3, not 3.1.4.
Right.
But when they start to take what are essentially religious doctrines or dogma and turn that into what all of us need to believe, then we got a serious separation of church and state problem, and we make terribly bad public policy judgments.
And what about this in terms of, like, where Christ was born and where he wasn't born? That isn't important when it comes to the actual practicing of Christmas and the actual, you know, asking for state enforcement of specific types of Christmas activities, either on a town level or a city level, that there are people that are complaining that if you take Christmas out of it and you just make it holidays, that you're undermining what this country is built on.
Yeah, right. Unless you're living literally in the Batcave, wherever that may be at this time, now that Adam West isn't on the air anymore, I don't know where that is. But if you're in the Batcave, then presumably you don't know it's Christmas time just by going to every shopping mall in the United States of America.
Right.
But some of these religious right activists say that unless the government calls the holiday season Christmas, they are somehow doing a disservice to them personally as Christians and a disservice to the country. The truth is that the framers of this Constitution of ours, which has served us very, very well for over 200 years, these guys would not have been putting up nativity scenes outside of the government buildings, because they would have said, as Jefferson said about declaring Thanksgiving a national holiday, I'm not going to do it, he said, as president, because it's up to religious people who believe in the religious roots of this season to go and promote it themselves. That's how radical the framers were when it came to separating church and state. These guys now view themselves as victims, unfortunately, on the religious right, because government will not always embrace, endorse, bless, and fund whatever they think is right.
Barry, there are certain aspects of the Bible that, if taken literally, would mean some very, very strange things would be going on in this country, particularly, for example, the punishment for adultery, which is in the Bible, and I believe it's death. How do people argue for a literal interpretation of it? Is it that they don't know these passages are actually there?
That's what they're working towards.
Well, let me tell you something, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Some of these folks are already there. There is a movement called Christian Reconstructionism in this country that argues that every one of those standards and punishments mentioned in the book of Leviticus and elsewhere should literally be applied, not just to people who are adulterers, but even recalcitrant teenagers, of which possibly all three of us were in that category at one time, also can be killed. And every once in a while, if you push these reconstructionists on a radio or television show, they'll concede that that's exactly what they have in mind.
That is really the Taliban.
It is really the Taliban. Yeah. Now, a lot of those folks, so Mark, you're absolutely right, are not aware, some of these folks are not aware that these kind of prohibitions and penalties and punishments are literally in the Bible, because even that is cognitive dissonance for them. I don't know what that means exactly, but I learned it in Psychology 101.
I think it's a wonderful phrase, and it's not important to know what anything means, Barry.
Yeah. As long as you have faith.
Absolutely. And you know what? I really do stand for the proposition that people in this country have a right to believe anything they want, and to articulate it and to try to convince me. For example, some of the folks who don't believe in evolution, they believe in creationism, and you ask them, well, who is the so-called intelligent designer of the universe? And they'll say, well, it could have been aliens that seeded the earth. And some folks actually believe that we are all the products of some experiment from aliens from outer space. You can tell me about it. You can talk, do whole hour and a half, some late night radio talking about it. I'm not going to buy it. As long as you don't try to teach my kids that that is true, or that there is evidence for that in a biology class in a public school, you can believe what you want in America.
But isn't that interesting, though, that they would say aliens and not God? That there are some people that are like, well, who are the aliens? Well, are they God?
Well, you know why they don't want to say that? Because if you say in these promotions of so-called intelligent design, the newest variant on creationism,
they don't want
to get caught. So you say, well, don't you mean the intelligent designer is God? And they'll go, well, it's possibly aliens. And I mean, these are sophisticated people, like Michael Behe, who teaches at Lehigh University, who's one of the few scientists who get caught up in the so-called intelligent design movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do evangelicals and others who believe this sort of thing reconcile the sacredness of the Christmas holiday with the commercialism of the holiday as it's expressed in this country?
You know, it's a very, very interesting problem, because I myself, as a person who is not a conservative evangelical Christian, but certainly takes my religion seriously, the truth is I'm offended by how much commercialization there is in this season. That the whole idea of the religious roots of this holiday, which ought to be celebrated, one would think, by Christians who celebrate the holiday, is overwhelmed by everything from Frosty the Snowman to Santa Claus, to the point that a teacher a few years ago actually got into some difficulty in his elementary school classroom for putting up a nativity scene, which he knew he'd get in trouble with if it was purely religious. So he put the baby Jesus out of the nativity scene and put a Santa Claus doll into the nativity scene in the manger in order to secularize it, because he thought that that would be acceptable under the Constitution. I mean, that's just stupid. And the truth is that every year we have battles over religious displays in public places. My solution, when people say, well, what do you want us to do, is to put up religious displays outside of your religious buildings. Or if you're a practitioner of a particular religion, then promote it by putting up the symbols, the sacred symbols, on your private property, like your lawn of your house or the place outside your temple or church or synagogue.
I think it'd be awkward to have a nativity scene outside the temple, but that's me.
But that's only you.
Yeah, but it's you. And you know, there was an interesting poll done. There was a fuss out in San Diego a couple of years ago, and our chapter of Americans United for Separation of Church and State in San Diego got involved, and they wanted to put a nativity scene up outside of a government building.
Yeah.
So our members went around to every church in that community to see if they had nativity scenes outside of their churches, Christian churches.
Uh-huh.
Only one-third of the Christian churches bothered to put up a nativity scene. Some of the same churches that didn't have their own were fighting to have it at City Hall. Tell me if that makes any sense. No, that's what some of us in the religion business call cheap grace. You want the government to do the things that you yourself can't be bothered with, like getting out the wise men, the baby Jesus, the shepherds, and the manger.
Save the church some money. Let the government do it. We're talking to the executive director of American United for Separation of Church and State, the Reverend Barry Lynn. We will be back with him after this on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online at morningsedition.com from Air America Radio.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're talking to the executive director of Americans United for a Separation of Church and State, the Reverend Barry Lynn. We're talking about the Christmas holidays. And there's a slippery slope on both sides of this, isn't there? That, you know, that if you let the people who just want to have Christmas have their way and see themselves as victims, and that this should be a Christian country and the government should get behind it only being Christmas, it's always been like that, that's the way we want it, then that's an extreme. But also, if you let it go the other way, then it works against the separation of church and state, and the power of that in encouraging people to practice whatever it is that they want, and sort of washing all of it out.
Yeah, one of the things that has been happening over the past few years is that local school districts, for example, are calling, instead of a Christmas holiday, they're calling it a winter holiday, and this upsets some fundamentalist Christians. But the point is, these school districts are trying to be sensitive, legitimately sensitive, to the incredible diversity that this country has. Mm-hmm. 2,000 different religious groups, 15 to 20 million non-believers. As a parent of two kids who went through public schools in several states, I never went to a concert, for example, in the month of December that was religious, because the communities I lived in were multicultural, multiracial. People didn't have an interest in trying to promote one religious viewpoint or everybody's religious viewpoint. They stuck to secular, seasonal material, and it was perfectly fine. The kids loved it. They didn't notice it. If they were Christian kids, like my kids, they heard those Christmas carols plenty of times around the piano or in our church. They didn't have to hear them in their public school.
It would seem to me it would be more interesting for a school or even a city or a town to actually, you know, take on the multiculturalism of a pageant.
Well, sometimes that can be done, but of course you have to do it right, and you have to make sure that no one really is offended by it. And one of the problems in trying to teach, for example, about religion in public school, which is something you can do under the Constitution, the teachers tend to be Christian. That is to say, a higher percentage of teachers are Christian than are Muslim or are Hindu. As a consequence, whenever they talk objectively about religion, they tend to emphasize their own religious experience, which in most communities in this country is still Christian.
Can I ask you a weird question about that? Because it's sort of it's something I've always wondered about. If you believe, if you truly believe in a specific, let's say Jesus, if you really believe in Jesus, when you say that, you know, there's plenty of room for all other kinds of religion, I tolerate, you know, all other kinds of religion, and as long as, you know, there's God, it doesn't matter what faith he reveals himself to you in. Isn't that disingenuous? And isn't one of the nature, the one of the tenets of belief is that he is the one God and that you're just sort of paying lip service to the idea that you're tolerant?
Well, you know, I don't really like this idea of tolerance much because I think tolerance implies that you've got some big guy who's going to tolerate all these small guys mm-hmm. who have weird ideas that he doesn't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, a lot of the framers of our Constitution didn't like the word tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
George Washington, for example, didn't like it because he said it. What we really should be talking about is genuine freedom of religion, where the government takes no position, doesn't become the authority figure that embraces any one religion. And I prefer that model. Now, most of us, though, also understand that part of what tolerance is all about is a decent respect for the multitude of ideas that we have in this country. And when somebody in a school says, you know, because we don't want to pick favorites in a holiday period like December, we're just going to talk about the season. We're not going to talk about it with regard to any specific religious tradition or traditions. And that's perfectly acceptable. It ought to be okay for a school district or a local government to say, we're not putting up nativity scenes. We're just putting up happy holidays. And then you can fill in the blank. And if you don't have a holiday, you can make one up.
Why do you think it is that many on the religious right, not all, but many, seem to be framing this argument as one of political correctness, which is generally a secular political term for it?
Well, they call it politically correct if you're at all sensitive to the fact that we have all these different religions in the country. They make it sound like a bad thing. I don't know about you, but when I went to school and I'd get a paper back and it would say correct, I wanted to see that. That meant good. That meant I passed. That meant I get to go out to the movies on the weekend. Being politically correct really just means being sensitive to the fact that this diversity and respecting it. And I think some of these folks on the religious right are, in fact, so intolerant, so insensitive, that it bugs them that they don't get to say 100% of the time the religious ideas that they believe to be true. They're not really interested. Get back to your earlier question, Mark. They're not interested in any kind of consideration of alternatives.
Absolutely.
They have all the answers for everything, and they're not about to listen to anybody's second opinion.
And when they say they're going to listen to you, it's usually in a condescending tone, like you were saying. It assumes a tolerance.
Exactly. That we'll put up with you because we will save you eventually, and if we don't save you, we will get the government to pass a bill or something that will force you to be saved, literally or figuratively.
Right. So this is a very interesting thing, though, because I was talking before about, and I'm not sure whether I was clear on it, that when you have politically correct behavior, that, you know, that becomes, in some respects, where you end up is another extreme, where you wash out all of people's beliefs in order to not be focused on any one belief. And that can become a problem, too, right?
No, it can, because if you, for example, literally didn't want to recognize the religious significance to events in American history or in world history, you'd be going too far, because you'd be telling kids a false information, a lie. I don't want them to lie about sex. I don't want them to lie about religion. I don't want them to lie about history. So there have been some small number of examples of people who I think have gone too far. But what we should do in public schools, for example, is when religion becomes a topic that fits into the curriculum, whether if you're talking about poetry and it happens to be an allusion to the Bible in the poem written by John Keats, you ought to be willing to say that. We're not trying to sanitize reality. We're just trying to recognize that you've got to deal with religion in a particularly sensitive way in the diverse country that we've got. I don't think that's terribly controversial. Don't tell that to Jerry Falwell. Don't tell that to Bill O'Reilly.
When we talk about religion, I guess we, because we're here in the States, talk primarily about Christianity. How do you see other world religions in terms of their tolerance for other religions?
Well, there's a tremendous diversity about that because, of course, there are some places around the world where there's a remarkable intolerance on the part of Muslim fundamentalists, for example. You don't want to start going out and preaching in the street corners if you're not preaching what they believe is the truth. In other parts of the world, including in Europe and Australia and other places that people might visit, you're going to find an extraordinary amount of acceptance of religious belief and no interest whatsoever in having government promote any particular belief. A couple of years ago, I was in Australia talking to a gentleman who was about to be appointed to the High Court, the Supreme Court of Australia. He said, what is your average day like? And when I described what I was fighting every day, publicly promoted prayers in the school, ending discussion of evolution, giving kids no information about sex education, putting up Ten Commandments monuments that weigh 2.5 tons in judicial buildings in Alabama. I think that this gentleman literally thought that he was having a conversation with a lunatic because he didn't believe that America, this sophisticated country from where I had come, in fact was having on a regular, almost daily basis, battles about those and dozens of other religious issues.
It is pretty amazing, isn't it? We're talking to Reverend Barry Lynn, the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. And thank you. It's great talking to you.
Terrific.
Thank
Always you so nice much. To be here.
And there's the sound of the fax machine. That, of course, is the fax from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, try to unionize the 8 maids of milking. Two, change the story of the 3 wise men so they give gifts that inspire a baby's creativity. Three, explain that 3 French hens are beyond the reach of most working families. Four, retitle Christmas Story, Rudolph the Differently Nosed but Still Valid in His Own Right Reindeer. Five, today's phrase, drop this into conversation. You know, if Dickens' A Christmas Carol took place today, Tiny Tim wouldn't be able to afford the copay on his crutches, man. Wake up, people. Thanks again to Barry Lynn. We always like having him on the show. Now, Riley.
Yo.
We've got something very special coming up.
Nobody told me. What is it?
All right. We're going to listen to a segment that got more responses than anything else we've ever done on Morning Sedition.
Oh, was that the one where you went off on that listener?
No. It's the one. Which one? You're the one who goes off on listeners. Don't try and pin that on me. And a lot of these responses, they wanted to know what was happening when the mics were off. And, well, folks, we're going to tell you. It's our infamous Wrestle a Republican show. We'll bring it to you next, and Riley and I will provide a little running narration. We may even have a few surprises right here in the studio.
Yeah.
It's 2 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Because two marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, along with Mark Riley. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and we've got classic bits and all new stuff for you today, because this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, liberals of all kinds, even our conservative friends, you're welcome as well, and of course, wrestling fans. We're going to get into something we did here a while back, Mark Riley. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Mark Maron.
It's nice to see you. So, you remember that thing we did?
I remember.
With Mick Foley?
Mick Foley, one of my favorite wrestlers. Remember, I am a wrestling fan.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't a big wrestling fan until I started learning a little more when we talked to Mick Foley. Well, what happened was, we got really tired before the election of hearing from, you know, these Republican emails and phone calls of these blowhards that would say to us, you know, we're all talk, no action, you know, why don't you guys do something about it? So basically what we did was we solicited our Republican listeners, you know, to come in and wrestle one of the hosts.
Yeah, you know, at first I wasn't sure how this was going to work out. You know, I'm figuring, hey, you know, somebody would put out a call to wrestle somebody. I didn't figure anybody would actually take it seriously.
What did we know?
Yeah, a lot of people took it seriously.
I know, we got tons of responses, but the one that was, you know, really the most interesting, you have that email?
I got that email right here.
All right, what does it say?
Losers, I just heard you call for a Republican to come on your show for a fight. Well, I'm 5'6", 145-pound Manhattanite, and I'll gladly take up your offer, and you know what? I'll beat your ass. You know why? Because you liberal Americans are nothing but a bunch of cheese-eating surrender monkeys, and there's no way you'll ever go through with it. I'd love to come down to your show just to see the look on your face when somebody actually takes you up on your empty challenge. By the way, you chickens have no idea what it's like to be fed up. I've been living in this city I love for 25 years, and I'm sick of dealing with liberals like you thinking you can run this city. Remember, Rudy Giuliani equals Republican, David Dinkins equals Democrats. I'll see you in the studio, blankies.
What is that? You know, how could we not turn down that guy?
Yeah, this is Dave from Manhattan, a registered Republican.
It was so clear that this was our candidate. There was no way it wasn't going to be this guy. And we prepared ourselves, and we accepted Dave's challenge. And then we got this other email in response. You got that one?
Yeah, right. Yeah. We accepted his challenge, and you know, he decided to talk even more smack. Nice try, saving face by saying you're going to go through with this wrestling match on the air. But guess what, Mark Moron and Mark Liley? You're full of it. There's no way you're actually going to fight me, and I'll be in your studio to prove it. Yeah, Riley, I'll check my neck as long as you don't forget to wear your dress. As for Moron, I shouldn't have a problem with one hand tied behind my back. Dave from Manhattan. He left his contact information, a phone number, address, the whole nine, man.
Moron. Like, I haven't heard that all my life.
Yeah.
Moron. That guy's he's a genius.
Hey, tough guy.
I'm getting all pissed off again.
Come on,
man. Unbelievable. So we took him on. We took him up on it. He came down to the studio, and you know, we wrestled.
Yeah, we did tussle.
We had a wrestling match.
We threw some hands.
Yes, we did. And here's what happened. That you, Dave.
Oh, he didn't show yet?
The big talker.
Oh, yeah.
He was supposed to be here like at 5 till. He was supposed to be here on the break before. I knew the guy.
5'6", 145. What? He couldn't get up here in the elevator or something?
I just knew he would bail. You know, it's like these guys are just windbags.
Oh,
you know what
man.
I mean? Just like ditto head windbags. You know, I'm glad that we.
Maybe we could get Limbaugh to come up here. He could wrestle one of us.
He doesn't.
We could take him easy.
Isn't there again? Now, Rush is going to come in and wrestle me. And that's the plan. I've been calling him a liar for a long time. And, you know, finally, he's going to come and wrestle me.
You got more pregnant pauses than James Brown. I just want you to know.
That's Al Franken. Watch me on the Sundance Channel. Dead air.
But you know what? It's no fair with Franken. Franken is an ex-wrestler himself.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He is.
Yeah, he's an ex-wrestler. That's no fair.
He's got that. Yeah. You know, oh, he's got that wrestler build kind of.
Yeah, the wrestler build. Take him down. Pin him. Now he's not the SmackDown kind of wrestler. He's not a Monday Night Raw wrestler.
No.
He's one of those guys that you see in the high school photographs with the two cones on the side of his head. You know, all of that stuff.
Yeah. But well, maybe we should get him down here. Maybe, but I think he's on the road.
Who? Franken?
Yeah, I'll wrestle.
Yeah.
Him.
Anybody got his number?
I think he got back problem though. I don't want to hurt the old guy.
Oh, I forgot. You make light of his back problem, don't you, Mark Maron?
No. You know, it's like I've always thought Al was funny. I mean, it's just like I've always thought Al was funny. I got no beef with Al. I just like doing the impression. 11 pass, no
11
Dave.
Pass, no, no Dave. Dave?
It's not like he had traffic. The guy's supposed to be from Manhattan. It's like, take a train, idiot.
Yeah, where are you, Nancy?
Yeah, but I didn't put on this stupid outfit for nothing. You know what I mean? I got my cape.
And Ramon went to great trouble to get you that out.
I'm all jacked up on ginkgo and fake organic Bennies.
Wow, fake organic Bennies.
Organic Bennies, you know, whatever they are, caffeine and stacked glucose, you know, super fuel.
You're going to be up until now. When are you doing Tough Crowd again?
Dude, what? Is here.
Oh, he is here.
This is kind of weird. Oh, hey, man. What's up, man?
Hey, yo.
That's Dave.
How you doing, man?
What?
We're not getting his last name.
All right.
You're not using his last name? How you doing? How you doing, man?
How you doing, man? Yeah, I'm Mark Maron. Yeah.
Have a seat, Dave.
Thanks for coming down.
What's up, man?
Are you ready to... What are you ready
to... Yeah, I don't have these on yet. Hang on.
Hey, wait a minute. You know, you do look about 5'6 and 145. You weren't lying about that.
Well, I mean, I'm not the kind of guy that lies. So, you know, that's not my side, remember?
Yeah, no, that is your side, and that's why we're here. We're going to finish this thing.
That's right.
Well, that was why I replied to your challenge. You know, if you really say you're going to finish it, I mean,
that's
why I came in. I don't mean to crap on your place, but
confrontation is a metaphor for who's going to win in this election. You know, I'm just tired of you guys talking crap all the time.
That's right.
Okay, well, that's why I came down, and we're ready to go. I mean, I hope you guys are serious about this.
No, I'm serious about it.
I signed the thing that you can.
The waiver?
I hope you guys sign it because I'm not the one that's going to need it.
Hey, we have insurance. We have company insurance. But we're not worried about you anyway. Which one of us is going to do this, man?
Yeah.
What's the, you know, who do you,
well,
who
I,
do you want?
Well, I, if I had a choice.
Choose the white guy? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
no.
Like, repeating hundreds of years of oppression.
The white guy is, if your fighting's as good as your comedy, I'd probably take it.
Dude!
Dude, you know what?
He's hitting below the belt now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
You, Mark Riley, you might have given me a good shot like 25 years ago, but...
I've been working out for the last 25 years just to give you a good shot now.
I hope I don't break your hip something.
Oh, man. We're going to work this out. We're going to figure out who's going to take this.
Can I crack
down.
My knuckles on here? Nah, I guess
I thought
it doesn't work.
You are kind of an ass, you know, but I mean, I thought...
I mean, what do you want? You asked me to come down here and do this.
I
got out of bed earlier. I don't usually get up at 6 o'clock.
All right, dude, we're going to do this.
What time do you get up, Republican boy?
I get up at 7. I work in sales.
Oh, you work in sales? What do you sell? Drugs?
I work for Innotech Technologies.
Oh, all right.
Innotech?
Innotech.
Yeah,
Innotech.
Republican lobby group of some. Look, we'll decide who you fight, okay? And we're gonna come back and we're going to do this thing. Well, we did decide who Dave was going to fight, and Dave wasn't too happy with it. We'll hear that when we come back, and we're going to get into what happened when the mics were turned off, so we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Okay, welcome back. It's Mark Riley here with Mark Maron.
Good morning.
We are revisiting our Wrestle the Republican show, which is a classic in Morning Sedition history. And what's happened now is that our Republican, Dave, has come down and he's ready to wrestle. And we're going to rejoin this where we decided which host Dave was going to wrestle. And notice, we only said Dave would wrestle one of our hosts. We didn't specify that it had to be one of us. Right, Mark?
That's absolutely true.
Have a listen to this, and then we'll be back to fill you in on some of the stuff that was happening during the break.
Can I just say, you guys are very nice in the break. Like, it's a shame we got to do this. But I liked talking with
you. He's like smug, you know? It's like you just...
Come on. We had a good time in those last 5 minutes, right? That was fun. We were like actually talking like reasonable people. Now you get back on the mic and you're all like braggy and stuff. Like, you know, dude.
I mean, I wasn't talking to you. I mean, you were blathering on. I mean, I guess if that's like a conversation to you, that's cool. Look at that laugh, man. It's
like they say uptown, talking more spit than a little bit.
But listen to that laugh. Like these guys, like even their laugh is like condescending. All right. Well, let me right now. I want to introduce our guest host. He's a best-selling author. His new children's book, Tales from Rescal Lane, comes out October 19th. His first novel, Tietam Brown, is now in paperback. Oh, and I forgot to mention, he's 3-time World Wrestling Entertainment Champion. Please welcome our guest host for today, Mick Foley.
Yeah.
All right, so what's up, Dave?
Yeah, Dave.
So Mick's going to watch by you guys?
No, Mick's going to be an active participant. Yeah. I'm going to kick a little conservative can.
Yeah, America Radio.
Yeah, how about that?
But I didn't. Well, that's a funny bit. But like, I know you think you're a comedian, but I know that I signed on for, you know, it's one of you guys, right?
Yeah. Does he look funny to you?
Can I ask you a question? Do I look like I'm joking, you condy coddling communist?
All right.
Would you like me to put one hand behind my back? This is all legal, right?
I knew you guys would. Well, you got me down here. We should do something that's actually like a real thing.
Well, why are you being relatively baby about it?
Come on, like, man, this can be real.
Why can't we have an October surprise?
Like, I mean, you always talk about like O'Reilly and being like an ambush guy. Like this is like real ambush.
So it hurts, right? It hurts when it comes from our side, right?
Yeah.
And this is like, you know, this is just like, this is gonna be fun. So what, you're gonna wuss out?
Come on, man.
It appears
Come
as
on.
If he's in wussing out mode right now.
You guys, where's the restroom? No, I mean, like, if this is, like, a real thing, I
what, are you going to find your shiv in the toilet stall?
Yeah, really.
All right. Wait, let him go to the bathroom and we'll see if he wants to do this.
Yeah, we'll see if he wants to come out. Whoa.
See, Davey.
Wow.
All right, dude.
Don't go away, man. Just go away.
Awfully.
Come back when you don't have to.
He's awfully sensitive for a conservative guy.
Make sure that guy's cool and
yeah.
And take.
He looks a little upset. Mick, Yes.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Great to be here, yeah.
Now, Rescue Lane. Tales from Rescue Lane.
Yeah. This is the one I was talking about last month I was on.
That dude was so freaked out.
Yeah. I feel kind of bad for him. You know, were you guys hanging out during the break, or was he just blathering on?
No, he was just blathering on. Trust me.
I was being, you know, hospitable. Anyway, so Larry, let's try and do this and see if, I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of tense. But, okay. So you write the children's book.
A segue from kicking the Republicans' butt to the children's book.
Will you sign one of these for my nieces?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah.
And for my daughter.
You got it.
What's it about?
Man, it is it's the WWE superstars or wrestlers as little kids, all living on the same block and learning little life's lessons along the way.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And it's done in rhyme. And I wrote these stories a few years ago, and I thought that they would not see the light of day when I left WWE under less than ideal circumstances. Although, by wrestling standards, they were, you know, downright cozy circumstances. There had been a lot worse departures than mine. And so I just assumed that I couldn't publish the book because they had copyrighted characters and they couldn't publish it without me. And so in the meantime, I went about reading it to, you know, a wide variety of schools and camps and libraries. So it may be the most read book that's never been published. Now that it's out, I'm really proud of it. And it is virtually critic-proof because a critic can't say anything about it because I've read it. At this point, well over 10,000 kids, and that's not like one massive 10,000 kid reading. It's, you know, 20 kids here, 10 kids here.
Has Brent Bozell read this yet?
You know what? Here's something about Brent Bozell, okay? When the lawsuit happened between WWE and Parents Television Council, we became privy to all of their inter-office emails, and so there was a email from one of these guys to Brent, and it said, I'd like to write an article about the very offensive children's book by wrestler Mick Foley, Mick Foley's Christmas Chaos.
Yeah.
And then Brent writes back in the email, to tell you the truth, I didn't think it was that bad. And then he says, like almost catching himself, don't get me wrong, it's horrible. It's just that with all the other stuff going on, it could have been worse. And so now the article comes out, and it's got Brent Bozell's name on it, so A, he has had anything ghostwritten for him, and then B, they go on and on about just how horrible the book was, because apparently on one of the children's wish lists, there was a China doll, you know, that's a China action figure, and China because she had posed for Playboy.
So oh.
It was morally offensive.
They're really reaching,
oh,
aren't they?
Oh, man, they really did. So this one, yeah, even Brent Bozell would have a problem criticizing this unless he finds the word poop offensive.
Well, I guess he doesn't listen to this show.
Because there's a line in there. It's a Kurt Angle is bragging he'll be the only one to ride the Titan roller coaster at Vinnyland, and it turns out, like all bullies, Kurt, you know, he's not nearly as brave as he lets on. And it says, the Titans car zigged and zagged and went it loop the loop. Stacy looked at Triple H and said, I think I smell a poop. And, you know, so Kurt's had a little accident.
Hold on. We might need that.
Oh, there we go. But other than that, there's no violence and no offensive language of any kind.
But I also heard some stuff that maybe we can do this after the break. And is that guy, you know, I mean, I see him talking
to... Is he talking to Clint Larson?
He's talking to Larson.
Because I'm getting out of my zone now, to tell you the truth.
You've got to get back.
Let's talk about the paperback. There's plenty of violence in that.
Well, you've got a novel. Oh, yeah. But also, you also tour the country and talk to kids about politics, too, as well.
Yeah. I got involved in the SmackDown Your Vote campaign. I haven't really been touring the country. It was my idea to bring it around college campuses around the country. And then Vince McMahon seized on the idea. Well, and he said, Let's bring it to the University of Miami.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back. Let's go talk to Dave and see if, you know, he's not freaked out, if he's going to do this. All right, so now you see what happened. So you heard Dave. So at this point, he goes out. He's talking to Clutch Larson. He's trying to figure out, you know, whether he's going to do this, whether he's not going to do this. And, of course, the emails were kicking. The blog was kicking. We got a few, this is some of the reaction we got. You got one of those?
Yeah, I got a few of them.
All right.
That was not nice. Challenge someone, and when he shows up, he finds you brought a tank. Not very liberal-like. The Republicans lie and misrepresent all the time. Dirty tricks turned around. Aw, too bad. One of you two marks has to wrestle the guy, or this will look bad.
I like that guy, the regulator.
You
know what I mean? It's like, come on, you know, we've got to balance this out. There's so many people that think they should be running the show.
Dave was a typical repug. Tough talking until the match begins, then sissy, sissy, sissy.
Yeah.
Some jerk said you weren't funny.
Yeah.
Kick his Republican ass.
I found it fascinating that, you know, that these things came in instantly. People were sort of, you know, riveted. Mick Foley is so compelling. You know what I mean? Because, you know, he's the real dude. And then, you know, that guy was just freaked out. That guy, Dave, was freaked out.
Well, hey, you know, you want to come down, talk trash? You got to deal with the consequences. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, a fight actually did go down, and we'll hear it when we come back. We'll also hear the awkward silence, to say the least, from when we abruptly went off the air, and we'll let you in on what happened behind the scenes. It's 28 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Sedition, fighting treason with reason on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition.
Yep.
On Air America Radio. So what we're doing is we're revisiting our now infamous and classic bit of the Wrestle the Republican. As you know, if you've been listening or you listened, you know, when we did this before the election, you know, we put out a challenge to Republicans who were, you know, being asses and writing us emails to, you know, come wrestle one of the hosts. So we got a guy, we got a taker, this guy Dave.
Dave, yeah.
He comes down and we got a surprise guest host, Mick Foley, the professional wrestler. So now Dave, seeing what he's up against, is now, you know, in this position where he's trying to figure out what he's going to do. And he's talking to Jonathan Larson, trying to figure out what he's going to do.
Thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Freaking out a little bit. So now this is where Dave comes back into the studios, and you'll see what happens. You'll hear what happens there. And after that, we got a big surprise for you.
Sure do.
You go in and you talk to high school kids. You talk to college kids.
What the college, you know, I got to be honest.
Smack down the vote.
Yeah, smack down your vote. I do speak to colleges, but that's not primarily about politics. I'll work some political viewpoints in, but try to do it in a way that's respectful of everybody and understanding that some people are there to hear about wrestling, not necessarily politics. But I did get involved.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. Dave is back.
He's got his game face on.
A Republican guy. So did you sort it out with yourself or what?
Well, I didn't have to sort it out with myself. I had to yell at your producer a little bit for bringing me in here like this.
Did you find them?
Hold on, let me just reset this. So we got
his guts. Yeah. It's intestinal fortitude.
Dave is a Republican. He came in. We solicited that he's going to fight one of the
lied to me.
We didn't lie to you. This is like he's our guest host for today.
Yes.
Mick Foley is our guest host for today. He's going to be here for the whole hour, and that's the deal.
Right. Well. All right, so that's the deal. So, you know, I'll do it because, you know, I probably won't win, but I'll do it.
No, no, no.
Yes!
Wait, what was that word? Probably. I probably won't win.
What do you want me to do? If I back down, then you guys would make fun of me for
that. Yes, we would.
Yes.
Right. So
we're still going to make fun of you. You just wouldn't be injured.
You're talking like your side doesn't do dirty tricks. You know, you're talking like, you know, like this is like, you know, like some out of the left field thing, you know?
Yeah, granted, we're using the bait and switch. We baited you with the mark, switch you to Foley, kind of like the president did with weapons of mass destruction and Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Listen, Dave. I don't think you want to do this, man. I really don't. I think you ought to think about it. I know you thought about it in the can, but that was then. I think you need to think about it now.
Right, and you're telling me to do that.
Look at you.
You're telling me to do that, and then I'm gonna think about it, and I'm going to leave, and then you guys have a fun time in here.
Exactly.
No, they're going to do it.
It's okay. Nobody knows your last name.
Hold on a second. Dave, you do understand there will be consequences for your actions or lack thereof, right? You understand I've got a reputation. I'm not going to come on Air America and make a joke out of this thing.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
You do understand you might look a little bit different when you leave.
And there are plenty of blunt objects around here that can help in that regard.
All right, fine.
Oh my goodness, he threw out the headphones. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, you bush-loving fool. I'm going to teach you a little lesson here. I'm not going to smack you around. I'm just going to push your body and wait.
I'll tell you what. Tell me you love the environment.
All right.
Come on.
No.
Say that every kid deserves a fair shot.
You can't put my arm like that.
Say every kid deserves a fair shot. Regardless of how much money it's worth.
Wow. You remember that, Riley?
Yeah.
That's pretty pretty intense. And you know, and then after that we were off the air for a while at the behest of Clutch Harrison. So hang around, you guys, because after this we got a surprise. And I don't know if you're ready for it, but Dave is back. We're going to have Dave back with us here in the studio. He's going to talk about what was going on when we were off the air for a few minutes. And he's also going to, you know, we're going to go into the story behind a big fight with the Republican when we come back. So stay here.
Morning Sedition. It's more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com when you get to work, courtesy of Air America Radio.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. We just heard what happened in the studio when we wrestled the Republican, when Mick Foley, our guest host, wrestled the Republican and things got out of hand. We were off the air. And believe me, at the time, Riley, if you remember, people were freaked out.
People were totally freaked out. I still get asked about that day when I go to parties.
I was freaked out.
Yeah.
Now, we've got some listener emails here and some blog postings. One guy said, dude, it sounds like the wrestling guy just went nuts. Nuts. That's great.
Yeah. And another guy says, what the heck just happened? I just tuned in and hear the sounds of a melee.
Yeah, kick his little Republican behind. Make him say Abu Ghraib, and I wish we could do this to all Republicans. How do you like that?
Yeah, somebody else says, that was weird. They broke the commercial real quick, quick.
Wonder what happened.
Mm.
He signed a waiver, so I don't think he can sue. He was a punk anyway. All right, so now let's, Mark, let's hear what happened when we came back on the air.
Yeah.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
This is Morning Sedition. My name is Mark Riley. Mark Maron has left the room. Mick Foley is still here, however. Mick, good morning.
Yeah, I guess it's an interesting morning.
It certainly is. And, of course, for those of you who don't know, Mick Foley is a wrestling legend, 3-time WWE champion. And you recently went on the road and debated a fellow grappler by the name of John Bradshaw Layfield.
Yeah. We were taking a page out of the president's book and setting the bar so low for ourselves that, you know, nobody expected much of it. And people showed up, you know, thinking it might be good for a couple of laughs. And what they got was, a very well thought out, passionate debate.
So. Now, you kind of hit on a lot of different issues, and we have a little bit of a Bradshaw talking about education. This is from a youth debate on September 29th in Miami.
Some people don't want to go to college. Some people would rather weld. Some people would rather go into some type of trade. George Bush has supported $1 billion in funding to help people become what they want to become.
Mick Foley had this response to John Bradshaw Layfield.
He's not running for president. He is the president. I looked through the voting papers. He uses the word proposed, will, plan. Very seldom does he use the word did. George W. Bush is the president of the United States, and he promised a lot of things the last time. And the only thing he can point to, the only concrete results, is an increase in Pell Grants. It's when he promised an increase up to 5,100, but it's frozen the maximum level at 4,050 for the last 3 years. To me, that's not much of a record to brag on. I accomplished 1/4 of my promise. No Child Left Behind, a great idea on paper, underfunded by $27 billion. Now, I know President Bush's dedication to poor black children. After all, we saw how he stuck with them on 9/11. Even when the country was under attack, by God, President Bush would not leave their side while they read The Hungry Goat to him.
All right.
Hey, I'm back. Sorry.
You're back, Mary.
Sorry I missed that part, but I had to...
don't know. We'll deal with it. We'll deal with it later.
Everything's cool.
Yeah, no, I mean,
depends on what you mean by cool.
I can't. I'm not going to. Wait, let's just finish up. I didn't mean okay. to. Yeah, let's. I don't know where you guys are at, but everything's cool, man.
No, no, we were talking about the debate that Mick had with Bradshaw.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, talking about education, talked about Iraq, talked about a number of issues. Did you find, Mick, that the audiences there were responsive? Did they expect you, like, to be in character here, or did they really seriously consider the kinds of things that you were talking about?
They were. They thought it through. One problem is as soon as I said something, Bradshaw said that you know, Democrats didn't take 9/11 seriously enough, you know, and my response was, hey, it's not that we don't take it seriously, it's just that we resent, you know, Republicans justifying it for every action they make. And the crowd all went, ah. And then he said, hey, no, we can't have any cheering. I was like, damn. You know, they were pretty much in my corner on that whole thing. A lot of them were wrestling fans, but some of the best responses I got over the course of the next day, because we also hosted the debate watch party,
okay,
were from people who were not wrestling fans who showed up just out of curiosity and really got something out of it. I saw Paul Begala at the airport the day after.
Oh, wow.
Afterwards, and he was like, I heard that debate was great. You know, so that made up for Chris Matthews' less than enthusiastic response at the prospect of interviewing wrestlers.
I'll tell you, the Begala's a pretty good talker himself.
Yeah, wait a minute. Matthews had a problem with talking to wrestlers?
You know, we had heard he was a big wrestling fan, you know? And so when we show up there, and he goes, now, which one are you? Are you John and Mick? And so I kind of jokingly said, so I guess that rumor about you being a big wrestling fan was not true. I thought he'd laugh it off, and he gave the old eye roll combined with a head turn as if to say nothing could be further.
Dude, I tell you,
how pretentious are some of these pundits?
I've never been to a wrestling
thing. That's okay.
And I'd like to go, but like...
Well, yeah. If you want to know what a wrestling match is like, imagine being in Madison Square Garden. You've been in there before, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With 20,000 other people, and you watch this for like 3 hours.
You're talking about the Republican convention? I think that's why when I'm sure there are people out there, oh, what does a wrestler know about the political campaign or about America? And I would say, you know, that nowhere else, in no other vocation I can think of, does someone regularly straddle those two Americas as regularly as the wrestlers do. For example, I was invited to a party. I was from our person involved in community relations. I got a phone call and he used the word lucrative. And now nothing involving community relations is all free work. And they know that I like to help out. And so I'm in pretty frequent touch with the lady there. She's never used the word lucrative. And what it was this guy who was one of the wealthiest people in the world was having a 50th birthday, and he was having a party, and they wanted to surprise him with some of his favorite guests. I assumed they were bringing me in for the kids, and I was told on the ride over, no, that's Mr. Jones, a big fan of you. So me and Stone Cold,
wow.
And then we went upstairs. The OJs were playing in the living room. So this was conceivable. It's probably the nicest house I've ever been in. And then I thought, you know, a week ago, I was refereeing a match in front of 300 fans at the Tupelo Salvation Army Community Center. So, you know, I met a lot of people there. And one nice thing about people knowing me from TV and feeling like they know me a little bit, not just being a presence on TV, but they feel like they've had a chance to know me, is I can ask them questions. So I'll say to some guy who doesn't look like he's doing that well, you know, who are you voting for? And he said, well, you know, Bush. And I'll ask why. And you'd be surprised how many people who are down in their luck, or at least appear to be down in their luck, will cite the tax cuts as the reason for their choice.
Really?
And it's just shocking. Like, you just want to shake them and say, you know, don't you understand? And the other thing is the, well, Kerry flip-flops.
It's ridiculous. It was like that. All right. That guy, all right. It's just like, yeah, the flip-flop thing. It's like all those ditto heads saying that they just, you know.
They all say
that.
Everybody.
Can I tell you, and hopefully this isn't offensive, and I even prefaced this debate. I said that this was a suck-it presidency. And what I meant by that was back in 98, I'd be out there trying to make some real points and trying to provoke some real thought from the wrestling fans, and it was like kind of sinking in. And then the Degeneration X guys would run out and go, suck it! And the crowd would go, like, that's all they needed, you know, to satisfy them. And I said, eventually it worked out in my favor that fans said, hey, we, you know, felt like they needed a little more. And, right. And they were more likely to listen to my points, and the guys that said, suck it, kind of fell by the wayside. So,
well, I hear you alienated Dick Cheney, too.
So. Yeah. How did you manage that, Mick?
You know what? Cheney, he's a sensitive guy.
No, and he'd love to be best.
And I'm afraid that when we're up here blasting him, and that my real fear is by my affiliation with the radio station, I'm going to be I'm going to be taking off Dick Cheney's mailing list. And as you can see here, it's a little invitation.
Mr. Mick Foley. And on the top it says Dick Cheney. And I guess that's not Dick Cheney of Falls Church, Virginia.
No,
what
no,
we got here? We have reserved a special place of honor for you in recognition of the crucial role you played in the 2000 election. Wow. Wow. Did you go?
No, hell no, I didn't go. I just sat there and said, how did my name get on this list? You know what? I think it had some correlation with the fact that I had a couple of good financial years. You know, I think after I retired and I wasn't making the money, it's like, yeah, we don't need that guy anymore. But I'll tell you whose feelings it will hurt. It will hurt the president. Because he is a wrestling fan.
Dave is back. I thought that we were gonna like.
No, it's okay.
You all right, man?
Yeah, I want to make sure Mick was okay.
Oh, you all right, okay, Mick?
Yeah, man. You see, he is sensitive also.
Okay, cool, man. I just want to make sure we're cool.
We are cool.
All right, cool.
Yes.
All right, I'll buy the book.
You need Kayla to open the door for you?
No, I'm okay.
You're all right? You sure?
I'll get the guy to get my crush.
Hands still work?
thanks, guys.
I like
being on the show.
And you did?
It was fun.
So that was it, Mark. That's what went down.
Yeah, it was. I hope he's got all his teeth that day.
Well, he's coming into the studio right now, so let's be cool.
Okay.
Welcome back to the show, Dave the Republican. How are you, Dave?
Hi, guys.
What's up, Dave?
So everything all right? How did the arm and teeth, everything work out all right?
Or? Yeah, everything's healed, and I'm feeling a little better.
So are you still, you're not angry at us, are you? Or?
No, look at the outcome of the election. I'm not angry.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, but I understand, but you still got your butt kicked, didn't you?
Yeah, but it was worth it.
Oh, yeah?
Mandate is worth it.
It's not a mandate, number one. Number one, it's not a mandate.
Never will be a mandate.
And we appreciate you coming back. I feel like we're eating a little crow here. It's bothering me. Can you mind if I tell people your other name?
My other name?
Yeah.
You mean what I also go by?
Yeah. You mind if I tell them that?
Okay.
That's Brendan P.W. McDonald as David Republican. In a brilliant, I might say brilliant radio drama.
Yeah, it was.
In the modern world.
I still remember the furniture flying around the room.
Well, we had a real wrestler in here doing real wrestling moves to me, which was like a dream come true for me. I thought that was great that Mick Foley actually had me in an armbar. Like, he took it seriously.
Yeah. That was the funny thing is, like, Brendan, our associate producer, is such a wrestling fan that it was almost like living some childhood fantasy.
Yeah. Well, not just a childhood fantasy, but, like, I was, like, actually getting into it as a Republican.
Yeah.
That was the weirdest part of it all. And, like, you know, I was like, I have to fight this guy.
Yeah.
This is my pride on the line here.
And Foley is huge.
Yeah.
He's
Brendan
a big
guy. Is small.
Can I say, though, like, since we're on the air here, I want to, like, personally thank Mick Foley for doing that. Like,
yeah.
He was an awesome sport for that whole thing. Like, he could have thought that he came across poorly and not wanted to do it, you know, because he's actually kicking a guy's ass on the air. And, thought that would come off wrong, but he played right along with everything and had no problem doing it.
It's his job on some level.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's been retired from actual wrestling.
Kicking Republican ass is his job?
Yeah. Well, no, but just like the spectacle of wrestling.
Yeah.
He appreciated that we actually crafted, like, a wrestling angle
to this whole thing.
Yeah, because, like, it was somebody, so there were a few, we didn't really read them before, but there were a few blog entries.
That said that wrestling script number, whatever.
Yeah, they were like, this is Wrestling 101.
Yeah, yeah.
And right on, that's exactly what we were doing, which was what I thought was the fun about it, was that this was, like, a real wrestling scenario, but, like, played off kind of straight because we're in a legitimate, I put quotes around that, legitimate media format.
Yeah, even though it's an entertainment media format that some people forget. You know, the thing was is that everything worked so great because you orchestrated the noises and Mick Foley was on top of it. And just when Riley went out, like, we got to get someone in here, whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, let's not forget, we fooled the CEO of Air America.
Nobody knew.
It's no great shake.
But I mean,
Poole and Krieger, really. But
no, Mick really played along, I thought, really well. He did a great job.
And then the decision not to address it was hilarious.
Because
for days, people were like, did we get closure on this thing?
No.
What happened?
Not just days, man. Months.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I ran into somebody like a couple of weeks ago who said, you know that thing you did with the wrestler? Did that guy, did he ever get out of the hospital? They were serious.
Did he ever get out of the hospital? To me, the dead giveaway, Brendan, was like when you said, I got my crutch or whatever. What was it?
Yeah, there was some outside. you know, I just came back here to see if Mick was okay.
Yeah, that's hilarious. You know, I mean, but if people weren't onto it, then you got to say, like, oh, wow. But, you know, I forget the power of radio. Because
yeah,
the power
when
of radio
we listened to it after the show, we were kind of, like, taken aback by, A, how convincing Riley was,
yeah.
like, with asking us to shut the show down and get somebody in there.
Yeah.
And also just how, when you hear a lot of chaos going on, because it seems unplanned, you think that something must be wrong. And on top of that, the fact that the show came back without you in
that
the
was
room,
hilarious.
Like, that was when we got the most response from anybody.
Marin's
saying,
gone. It was real.
Something
was
must have real. Happened. He's gone, and he's now when he's back, he sounds rattled.
Yeah,
and,
right. That was it. Right. Yeah.
Foley was brilliant because when you walk back in the room, people just heard it. Will remember that he went, "Hey man, everything cool?"
Yeah. He's going to be in. Mick Foley's going to be my guest host while Riley's out of town next week for a couple of days. That should be exciting.
Yeah, that's
fun.
A lot of fun because whenever he's on, he always surprises people. We always get emails from people saying, you know, what was the deal with that wrestler guy? He was articulate. Aren't they supposed to be idiots?
He definitely breaks the mold. So there you go. The great mystery of the wrestling bit revealed. Thank you, Brendan, for doing all that.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, an all-new interview with Judy Gold and an all-new interview with George Lakoff, the author of Moral Politics and the Don't Think About an Elephant book, and also a very special, never-before-heard holiday edition of The Pashman Rules. That and much more, of course, Mark Riley.
Absolutely. That's, see you tomorrow.
You will see me tomorrow, although we're not really here.
That's okay.
Okay, I get it.
It's a miracle.
Right.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, waging a war of words against stupidity.
Morning Sedition
on Air America Radio.